RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast. Western New York race fans, it's time to crank it up.
Start your engine!
For the next hour, the airwaves belong to you. Sit down, strap in, and let's head to WGR's Fast Track.
All right, take a nice big deep breath, buddy.
With your host.
Let's go out there and have a good day, all right, bud?
Dave Buchanan.
Getting around Brad Keselowski, blocked just a few moments ago. Kyle Busch buries it down to the bottom. Kyle Larson to the inside of Jimmy Johnson for second. Grabs it, but Kyle Busch is long gone.
In his 12th try, Kyle Busch comes to the line. He will win the 33rd edition of the All-Star Race. He's not won a race all year in the regular season. He finally gets the ship righted here tonight at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
That's how you heard it. Last night here on WGR, good morning race fans, 11:03 here on WGR, Sports Radio 550. Welcome to another edition of WGR's Fast Track. I'm Dave Buchanan. Thanks for listening as always as Kyle Busch picked up the win in last night's Monster All-Star Race for the NASCAR Cup Series. Heard right here on WGR, the call courtesy of the Motor Racing Network with Jeff Striegel, Joe Moore there on the call as Kyle Busch took the advantage on the final restart on the final segment of the race, got by Brad Keselowski with a bold move just after the green flag dropped and held off Jimmy Johnson in the final 10 laps to capture his first career All-Star win, his first win of the season, and first win overall for Joe Gibbs Racing this season, in fact. It has been a struggle for Joe Gibbs Racing, but maybe Kyle Busch's win last night will turn their fortunes around here in 2017. Great show lineup for you here this morning. Most importantly, the phone lines are open, 803-0551, 888-550-2550. Lots going on in the world of motorsports. You've got NASCAR at the All-Star break. You've got the Indianapolis 500 qualifying today, the second half of qualifying, as we will set the field of 33 this afternoon at the Brickyard. Local racing in full swing. All the tracks were wide open this weekend on Friday and Saturday, so lots to talk about and want to hear from you at 803-0551. 888-550-2550. You can send us a tweet, too, at FastTrack550, and you can find us on Facebook, too, facebook.com/WGRFastTrack. Coming up on today's program, in about 10 minutes or so, we'll talk to Woody Kane of the Motor Racing Network. Woody was on hand in Charlotte last night for the All-Star Race and was part of the broadcast. We'll talk to Woody in about 10 minutes, get his thoughts on the All-Star Race and some other NASCAR hot topics going on there. And then coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll go back live to Indianapolis for the second week in a row and bring in Mark James from the IMS Radio Network. He'll be part of the broadcast next Sunday here on WGR when we carry live flag-to-flag coverage of the greatest spectacle in racing, the 101st running of the Indianapolis 500. As today is pole day at the Brickyard. Yesterday, they had the first round of qualifying to lock in the Fast 9 that will have a shot at the pole for today. That includes Fernando Alonso. So they will determine the top 9 positions. Then the remaining drivers will also re-qualify to find out where they will start, whether it be 10th all the way back to the 33rd starting position. Also, a very scary incident yesterday at the Brickyard as Sebastian Bourdais hit the wall in qualifying very hard. He was 227 miles an hour when he hit the wall in turn 2. Very violent crash. And he has suffered fractures to his pelvis and hip and has gone through surgery already. And is obviously very much doubtful for next Sunday's Indianapolis 500 for Dale Coyne Racing. So we'll also get Mark's thoughts on that. But just what one of those sickening crashes. When you see it, you just know it is not good. Luckily, though, Sebastian was alert and conscious for the immediate moments after the impact. But unfortunately, he did suffer a fractured pelvis. So once again, some hard hits at the Brickyard like we've seen in recent years. So we'll talk to Mark Janes about that at the bottom of the hour. We start this opening segment talking about NASCAR like we prefer to like to do here on the program. And last night's All-Star race, NASCAR certainly tried to make a good All-Star race. Unfortunately, the venue it continues to be the downfall of NASCAR's All-Star race, much like every major sport, it seems like they have a problem putting on a good all-star event. You know, we joke about how lame the Pro Bowl is. The NHL has gussied up the formats for their all-star game now with the divisional 3-on-3 format. And, you know, you've got the NBA's all-star games, you know, decent. Baseball all-star games had its problems over the years. You know, every major sport seems to have a problem with its all-star format, and NASCAR is no exception. They try every year. They try to put some new twist, some new spin on the all-star event, but in the end, Charlotte Motor Speedway is just not does not provide good racing. Mile and a half track racing with these cup cars is it just makes it hard. The track position, clean air is just so dang important, and no matter how many quirks and format changes, and this year we had the option tire, everything you try and throw at it just will not overcome the advantage a lead car has in a mile and a half track and how hard it is to pass. As we had very limited passing, the most action was on the restarts, and luckily there was plenty of those to at least provide some good action. But in the end, a sneaky pass by Kyle Busch at the drop of the green flag on the final segment snuck by Brad Keselowski and Jimmy Johnson and was able to lead from there and kind of pulled away. Good battle for second between Kyle Larson and Jimmy Johnson coming to the line with Kyle going back to his, or Kyle Larson that is, going to his sprint car roots, put a little bit of a slide job there on the 48 in the final laps. But Kyle Busch had just taken off from that point. As Kyle Busch got the win, it was Kyle and Kyle Busch, then Larson. Jimmy Johnson was third. Kurt Busch fourth, and Jamie McMurray fifth. And then it was Harvick, Chase Elliott, Joey Logano, Brad Keselowski, and Denny Hamlin. Those were the top 10 cars after the first four segments. They had a high enough average running position to qualify for the final segment, and they settled it among themselves for the $1 million grand prize as the field was pared down after the first four segments. First three segments, that is, and the driver's best average finishes determined who would be the top 10 that went for the checkered flag last night. And then you had the option tire that NASCAR brought in with Goodyear, the grippier tires that allegedly would take off 3 to 5 tenths of a second off your lap times, but didn't last as long. But not even those seem to really be much of a factor, again, compared to the prospects of clean air with these cup cars. It just did not help as much either. It was a fun storyline, something fun to talk about leading up to the event, but really once the green flag dropped, the option tires were not much of an issue. So the All-Star race is in the books. NASCAR will be back at it, of course, next weekend with the Coca-Cola 600 as part of Memorial Day weekend. And like I said last week, there are some guys in the point standings that are going to need to pick it up here because, as history has shown us, although, of course, things could change this year with stage formats and everything, that the guys in playoff contention coming out of the Coke 600 generally wind up being the guys that make the playoffs by the end of the regular season. And there are a handful of pretty big names right now outside the top 16 and not in contention for a playoff position at this moment. The bigger story, I thought, this week, though, in the NASCAR world was a report courtesy of Jim Utter from motorsport.com. And there are some potential NASCAR schedule changes coming up for the 2018 season. NASCAR continuing to work with their track partners and trying to provide an exciting schedule, and they've locked themselves in with these 5-year sanctioning agreements, so it's you can't pull tracks off the schedule because they have all have these 5-year agreements with NASCAR, so they can't lose a race. But you're seeing you know, dates starting to move around. We already know that one of New Hampshire's dates is going to Las Vegas next year, and that's part of some of these rumored schedule changes that Jim Utter reported this week, that second date at Las Vegas that they're taking from New Hampshire next year, which is traditionally a playoff race for the New Hampshire Motor Speedway, will go to Vegas, and that is actually going to be moved up in the playoffs. That is now going to be the kickoff to the playoffs instead of the Chicagoland Speedway, which has been the traditional opening race of the playoffs slash chase pretty much since we've gone to this chase format, at least in recent memory, that Chicago has always kind of been that first race. That will now be Las Vegas, so that will be interesting, obviously, for its location. You know, they're moving the banquet out of Las Vegas, partially because of this second date, but now this second date gets a little more added importance because it is the kickoff to the playoffs and all the media circus that goes around with that. So that should be an interesting date, and they're going to move Chicago somewhere into the regular season, which is also a good thing because that Chicago date, you know, being usually the first week of the NFL season, you know, the Chicago market, you're fighting with the Bears, of course. No matter how bad they are, they still get a lot of attention. The Cubs, which have been really good the last couple of years, they're usually in playoff contention that time of year as well, too. So a lot on the plate of the Chicago sports market that time of year. So to move it into a summer date will hopefully maybe get that race a little bit more attention from its home base there in the Chicagoland area of Illinois. The other big move is the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the Brickyard 400, which has traditionally been a early August, late July event. I think it's like the last weekend in July this year. July 23rd it is, actually. It's, you know, it used to be like first week August. They're moving that as the final race of the regular season, a date that's usually belonged to Richmond. And this is the one rumored change that I do not like at all, because Indianapolis, much like the Mile and a Half tracks, is not a conducive track for great racing. And you're going to have guys trying to earn points or a win to put themselves into the playoffs, and that's their last chance to do it. And they're going to be at a track in Indianapolis, which is going to be very difficult to pass on. And that could be a challenge for several guys, which, of course, opens up the possibility of some strange, unique pit strategy, especially with the stage formats. So that might make things interesting. But for making up positions on track, it could be quite a challenge at the Indianapolis Motor Speed. The other thing I don't like about the move is going back to the Chicago thought with the sports market. You're going to Indianapolis. You could be, you know, up against opening day at the Lucas Oil Stadium for the Colts that day. I mean, you've already got, you're right in the middle of football season there in Indianapolis with the Colts. I just don't think that was a wise move when you're already struggling to sell tickets for an event to put it up against a Colts game, a potential home game for the Colts. Not maybe the best thing in the world. But it'll definitely bring some added intrigue to the Brickyard 400 date. One thing to keep an eye on, though, with Indianapolis and stock car racing is when we do go there later this year at the end of July, is actually the Xfinity Series race, because they're going to be trying a lot of unique stuff with the Xfinity cars at the Brickyard this July for their race, including putting restrictor plates on the cars. And if we get an enhanced on-track product because of that, and NASCAR decides to put those rules on the Cup Series next year, that could, you know, then definitely spicing things up for that being the final date of the regular season. Richmond's race, which is usually the last race of the regular season, they actually get bumped into the playoffs, so we'll have an extra short track date for the postseason. So that, again, was a report from Jim Utter of Motorsport.com. Right now, though, let's go to the AT&T hotline and bring in one of the voices you heard on the broadcast last night of the All-Star Race here on WGR. Woody Kane joins us from the Motor Racing Network. Woody, it's Dave Buchanan here in Buffalo. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Well, Woody, it has been a great week to be Kyle Busch and his family. They were in Washington doing a little lobbying for one of their personal causes with fertility. Brexton had a second birthday, and then Kyle goes out and wins the truck race and wins the All-Star race. Pretty good week for the Busch family, to say the least.
Yeah, not too shabby at all for Kyle Busch. And he could have had, you know, he did have, but the week before at Kansas, for all intents and purposes, was Ben Rhodes' race, and even Kyle wouldn't do a burnout after that and said, you know, he had the best truck and we couldn't catch him.
Yeah, obviously, Kyle going back-to-back with the trucks, winning the week before and then getting the win on Friday night at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. Woody, what was your overall takeaway from the All-Star race last night and the format that they used for this year's event?
Well, I think it was a noble effort. I think there were some good ideas and some good concepts, but in many instances, in many sports or in many walks of life, the first thing that you try may not always be the final thing that winds up working. I think we're still in a situation, even with downforce off the cars for the past couple of years, where clean air is still the king in terms of the mile and a half tracks in particular. It's better at the super speedways, better at the road courses, better at the short tracks, but the bread and butter is the mile and a half track, and clean air on the nose is still king right now. Now, the softer tire, the option tire, I think was a good concept. I think it worked somewhat, but I think the tire needs to be a little softer so that they can get more of an advantage. When we saw some guys put it on in the early stages, they would pick up 2, 3, maybe 4 spots at the most and then kind of settle in right there. They didn't fall back necessarily. The tires leveled off, didn't really drop off a whole lot more after that point. And you see this from time to time on certain tires. They'll level off and just kind of stay where they are instead of continuing to fall off. I think there wasn't enough of a difference between that prime tire and that option tire to where it was really a strategy card that a crew chief could play in some you know, creative ways, even though Mike Bogoravich with Clint Bowyer did try to go 2-2, and people, as they are wont to do in this sport, I know this won't come as a shock to you, wave their arms, oh, they're cheating, whoa, they can't do that. They're almost like they do in golf, where they're always looking to bust somebody. But it didn't work out that way, and Bowyer went, you know, backwards immediately on that last restart. But I like it when they have different cards to play, different strategies they can try. This one, I think, simply didn't quite go far enough with how much quicker that tire was going to be. Remember, we came in with Goodyear saying it could be 3/10 to 5/10 quicker. Denny Hamlin, when he ran it the first time, said in his experience it was 1/10 and a half to maybe 2/10 quicker, but it only lasted for 6 or 7 laps before it started to lose that luster.
It seems like it might have been a better option, maybe if that had been a day race, maybe if a little more hot, slick conditions, maybe that would have had a little bit more effect versus running the race at night like they do. Not advocating for the move of the All-Star race to the afternoon, but just my knee-jerk reaction from that with the tires last night. We did, you know, see a lot of impressive runs, most notably from a points leader, Kyle Larson, Woody, and he continues to impress this year and made a nice move there on Jimmy Johnson at the end of the race to wind up finishing second. And just what a talent that young man. We knew he was talented, but now it seems like that the Ganassi team has gotten the right equipment around him, and it's really paying off this year for the 42 team.
Yeah, they've gotten better, and this is no fluke. They've led the standings virtually all the way from the opening gun here, and it's interesting to watch the evolution of Kyle Larson. Remember how he used to always want to be up in the high group because that's what gave him a lot of success in his dirt track racing. Now you see him searching for lines. Maybe the car doesn't work as well here. I can go there and try it and see how it goes. And they're fast almost every single weekend, almost every single track. And, you know, I understand that Kyle Busch won. He's probably the best or one of the best restarters on the circuit. But anybody who watched those first couple of segments knows that 42 car was bad fast as well.
Woody, one of the other big stories coming out of this weekend is the 43 team. Of course, Eric Almirola suffering the vertebra injury last weekend at Kansas, and he made some public comments. I believe it was on Friday there at Charlotte Motor Speedway, and he gave a very detailed description of what he's kind of gone through, and unfortunately, he's going to be out 8 to 12 weeks, but Eric was very forthcoming with details of what happened to him last week.
Yeah, and there was some speculation beforehand that this was not as severe an injury as Denny Hamlin had when he missed about 4 weeks, or Tony Stewart's injury. But then Eric said, you know, 8 to 12 weeks, and the doctors were there with him when he was making his comments. And the thing I can't get out of my head that he said in terms of not wanting to rush things and not wanting to get back, you know, too soon and put himself at risk is he's got 2 young kids, and he said, I want to one day be able to dance at my daughter's wedding. And that just kind of made it hit home for me, and it stuck with me.
You seem that's something we're getting more and more of out of NASCAR, Woody. I mean, you had the days of, you know, Darrell Waltrip driving with a broken leg and driver, you know, Ricky Rudd with his eyelids taped open and everything at Daytona. And now there has been such a major shift. You look at Carl Edwards retiring, Dale Jr., what he's gone through with concussions, drivers thinking more about the long-term consequences of their injuries. I'm not saying that DW or Ricky Rudd was ignorant or anything, but it's just a shift in perspective by NASCAR drivers these days when it comes to injuries.
Yeah, I remember it wasn't all that long ago, it seems, that Dale Earnhardt practically had to be dragged out of his car kicking and screaming when he was really too hurt to drive, and it was at a road course. And boy, you know, because we talked with Dale Jr. about this a little bit on Thursday. Back in that era, you could easily get Wally pipped out of your seat. If a guy comes in, fills in, and does better than you were, well, then that guy might wind up having your seat. You know, and you might wind up out of luck. It's a little bit of a different animal now with, you know, the sponsor connections and all that. But I think this is something that we're seeing in a lot of sports that are contact sports. Look at how just a year or two ago people were gasping with shock when some of these young linebackers would say in football, yep, I'm done, I'm not going to do this anymore. And because we know more now about the severity of injuries and how they can affect you long term, and guys are paying attention to that, and rightly so.
Woody Keene from the Motor Racing Network joining us here on WGR's Fast Track. Woody, just before I had you on, I was going through some of the potential changes for the Cup Series schedule that Jim Utter for Motorsports.com kind of broke this week. Not sure how familiar you are with the report, but from what you've seen, just what was your initial reaction to the possibilities of Vegas becoming the kickoff race for the playoffs and Indy, the Brickyard 400 possibly being the final race of the regular season?
I think the Vegas thing is interesting because that's a community that got together and agreed to put a few million dollars behind the effort. I think Vegas will certainly be able to gin up some hoopla about the start of the playoffs in a way that Chicago didn't, because, you know, you've got football, basketball, baseball, and a host of other things in Chicago, and NASCAR late to the party there, not through any fault of their own necessarily, but trying to get their foot in that door was a little bit of a tougher sell. In Vegas, at least until the NFL moves there, it's really going to be the biggest game in town. Now you've got two cup races out there. The only thing I worry about with that situation is everybody's talking about how wonderful it's going to be to have a couple of triple headers out there, and it will be, but the expense for the truck teams to travel that far twice a year instead of once a year is going to be something to keep an eye on and keep in consideration budgetary-wise for those teams. And you mentioned Indianapolis. Thank the Lord they have moved that thing to where it might not be 10,000 degrees every day. Oh, my goodness. I've had many drivers tell me that even if the temperature, the outdoor temperature, is not that hot on that particular day, that track to them feels like the hottest place that they race. And I don't know if it's, you know, the shape of it that is an air circulation thing, but I've been there many times. You mentioned Kyle Busch earlier when he won there, just fall out when they get out of the seat. They have to sit down, water dumped all over them, ice packs on them. It's just exceedingly hot there the way the schedule is now, and maybe this will help a little bit. But if they can't get the competition end of it straight at that track, it's not going to make all that much difference. I mean, people might be more apt to buy a ticket if it's 75 degrees versus 95 degrees, but you still got to be able to put on a good show to get them to come back.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it right now, that idea, because of the competition, but that was also one thought I did have too when it came out. I'm like, oh yeah, it might not be 100 degrees there, because that has been an issue with having that race either be the first week of August or the last week of July. Can be very hot. Woody, last thing before we let you go, you know, traditionally coming out of the Coke 600, your playoff field is kind of set. You don't see a lot of movements during the summer months unless a kind of an outsider can steal a win at some point during the summer months. But going into the Coke 600, we've got some big names on the outside looking in, and with playoff contention, guys like Matt Kenseth, Daniel Suarez, Austin Dillon, Dale Earnhardt Jr. I mean, there's going to be some guys scrambling this summer maybe to get a win to bump their way into the playoffs.
Well, let's remember, we've still got two restrictor plate races left, and Dale Jr. is awfully good at Talladega and Daytona. You've got Matt Kenseth, who is going to be there. I mean, that's Matt's forte. He just kind of goes along, and suddenly you look up when he wins races and he's really running well, you'll go, where did he come from? Mm-hmm. You know, you haven't really paid attention to him all day, and suddenly he's right there. I think the other thing that you mentioned there with Austin Dillon, he hasn't gotten his first victory yet, but they're getting better. I think they're moving in the right direction. And then Daniel Suarez, I mean, my gosh, he wasn't even expected to be in that seat.
Sure.
He's doing better than expected, and he changed his crew chief, gets Scott Graves back as Xfinity Series crew chief, and I think they're trending in the right direction. They're making gains on it and making strides. We know that's good equipment, but we also know that good equipment alone is not enough. It really is a meshing of the team, the driver, the crew chief, and the equipment all into one before that thing's really going to take off and fly. I think there's going to be some different winners. We still got a couple of road courses yet to go, yep. And that can produce some surprising results. So we may see some different guys that we haven't thought of yet who pop up into this. We could even have a situation, we haven't seen it yet, where we have more winners than playoff spots, and then you get down to, you know, the points with all these stage racing events that they have now where guys can pile up some points that way. I mean, even look at Joey Logano. He gets the win, but it's encumbered because of a post-race tech violation, so he can't really use that for playoff credit.
Should be a fun summer. Woody Kane for the Motor Racing Network, thank you so much. I know it's kind of an off day for you with working late last night. We appreciate the time. Thank you so much, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
You bet. It was fun.
All right. Woody Kane from the Motor Racing Network. For more, you can go to MRN.com. They have plenty of news on the NASCAR world on their website. They also have the Motor Racing Network app you can download to your smartphone. You can get all sorts of race and qualifying broadcasts that you can't hear on WGR through their app, and also more content as well, too. We come back, we'll switch from stock cars to Indy cars as Mark James from the IMS Radio Network will join us when we get back here on Fast Track on WGR. .11:33 here on WGR Sports Radio 550, Dave Buchanan and WGR's Fast Track. Got a call during the break, and I know the caller got his answer, but I figure it's worth mentioning anyway. We talked about Eric Almirola and his injury, again, likely to be out 8 to 12 weeks because of that fractured vertebra. Regan Smith drove the car last night in the open race, failed to qualify for the All-Star race, but still finished fourth. No announcement has been made, to my knowledge, that RPM Motorsports has chosen who will drive the car at Charlotte next week. Obviously, Regan Smith to be the likely candidate, but still no official word on who will drive the 43 next week at Charlotte. Interesting story that came out of that search. Alan Cavana of Fox Sports had a report this week that RPM, Richard Petty Motorsports, actually reached out to Carl Edwards, and Carl respectfully declined to not drive the 43, of course. Carl retired right before the season started back in January, and, well, he's not going to pull a Jeff Gordon and jump back behind the wheel, at least not for the 43 team, at least. So Carl Edwards was asked as a potential substitute driver for Eric Almirola, but again, declined the offer from Richard Petty Motorsports. 803-0551, 888-550-2550. Coming up this afternoon, it is qualifying for the Indianapolis 500 as they will set the field of 33. Yesterday was round one of qualifying. The fastest nine are locked in to today's qualifying to have a shot at the pole, while the remaining drivers will have to settle for positions 10 through 33. And with that, we'll go to the AT&T hotline and bring in one of the voices you'll hear next Sunday here on WGR during the broadcast of the greatest spectacle in racing, the 101st running of the Indianapolis 500 joins us. Mark James is on the line. Mark, it's Dave Buchanan here in Buffalo. Good morning.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Great to talk to you once again, Mark. And we're in the thick of it now, just a week away from the Indianapolis 500. Mark, what does this time of year mean to you and getting a chance to be there at the Brickyard during the month of May?
Well, I know businesses talk about Christmas in July as part of their advertising campaign, but for us, it's another Christmas time in May, if you will. 2 years ago, I moved within the shadows of this facility. I mean, I'm a 15-minute walk from the pagoda, and so it teases me throughout the course of the year because on many of the routes that I take to and from my house, I can see the pagoda no matter what time of day or night that it is, and whenever the multiple forms of series that run here have test sessions, I can hear them. Whenever there's a concert, I can hear it from my front yard. And so, you know, while certainly the racing appetite is wet throughout the course of the season, with all of the races that we do on the Advanced Auto Parts IndyCar Radio Network, this obviously is our Super Bowl. And for a kid that grew up in Central Indiana, having fallen in love with this place at a very early age, to be able to come to work, and I use that term loosely here, for now 22 years, is, you know, I, Dave, I'd have been satisfied after 1 year, because that's more than a lot of guys get to do it. But in my second year as anchor, my 22nd overall with the network, I'm just one of the luckiest guys in this business for sure.
I think the only thing I could remotely equate to that is the fact that I live 20 minutes from Niagara Falls. I think that's the only thing I could remotely link to having that experience of being within walking distance of the famed Indianapolis Motor Speedway and be able to see it almost on a daily basis. I think that's the only thing close in my personal experience. Of course, as I said, you got qualifying kicked off yesterday. No thanks to Mother Nature kind of holding up the proceedings. But we've got our Fast Nine for today with Ed Carpenter, Takuma Sato, Scott Dixon, J.R. Hildebrand, Alexander Rossi, Will Power, Fernando Alonso, Tony Kanaan, on Marco Andretti. Marco, what do you think of these nine gentlemen that'll have a shot at the pole this afternoon?
Well, I think it shows some variety, but I also think it shows that there's some guys that are, at this point, I think, especially mostly with Team Penske, you know, are focused on the race they set up. And those that did not get into the Fast Nine, their post-qualifying comments suggested just that. You know, they were disappointed in not making the Fast Nine because they understand sometimes you can be placed in harm's way and your day can be ruined if you start deep in the field for something that was really outside of your control. But I think, you know, this is a place where Montoya has referenced it a couple of times that he fell all the way to 33rd a couple of years ago and eventually won the race. If the fuel strategy and the pit stops fall your way, you can start pretty deep in the field and still have a very good day here for sure. And the drivers that have done that have referenced that, Ryan Hunter-Reay, for instance. But I think a very interesting Fast Nine for sure. And I'm sure no one happier than Chevrolet with the performance that Ed Carpenter put on display yesterday in being the top qualifier of the Fast Nine. And Ed is hopeful that he's able to back that up today. But certainly a number of compelling stories. I mean, Takuma Sato, don't forget he's in a car that Carlos Munoz finished second here with for Andretti Autosport a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a fast race car. And Taku was, you know, he led, you know, I believe 31 laps here a couple of years ago with Ray Allletter and Lanigan and had that incident with Dario Franchitti going for the race win. So, you know, he's a guy that knows the fast way around here. And, you know, obviously Tony Kanaan does. And how about the job that Fernando Alonso did? I mean, the beneficiary of the tutelage of the legend Gilles Deferrin and also Andretti Autosport, who typically run well here. So, you know, I don't know that there was necessarily a big surprise among
sure.
the Fast Nine. There was some disappointment among those that didn't make it. It's kind of surprising because throughout most of the year, Penske has dominated qualifying on road and street courses. But they certainly didn't dominate qualifying yesterday.
And how about your defending race winner, Alexander Rossi? What a year this young man has had, going from almost obscurity in North America, at least when it came to motorsports, to his surprise victory in this race a year ago. And now his focus has shifted to being a full-time IndyCar driver, and he qualified fifth yesterday, so he has a chance to defend his title from the pole position. It's been quite a story for that young man.
Well, I think he's ready to prove that last year was not a fluke, despite the manner in which he won the race. And I mean, you go back to Long Beach, it was shocking to me that all four Andretti cars fell out for one reason or another and all had DNFs. And, I mean, Alexander Rossi was poised to win that race and certainly finish on the podium. I mean, he's been fast. He's gone through the circuit one time now. He's more familiar with the racetrack. He's getting more and more familiar with the race cars and the setup and whatnot. And I don't think Alexander Rossi has any interest in being a novelty. He's a guy that wants to compete for race wins and championships. And I think he feels pretty confident in his abilities now as well. He should. And I think he's he's a contender come race day, no doubt about it.
Of course, we need to talk about, unfortunately, that horrible crash for Sebastian Bourdais. Here's a guy that's had some bad luck. I mean, motor problems at Phoenix and the road course race at Indy there last weekend. And now this terrible hit at 227 miles an hour, fractured pelvis. He's had to have surgery. But still, I guess the result could have been a lot worse. And there was a lot of safety implementations that protected him from even worse injuries with a hit like that.
It's multi-layered. The Hans device, certainly first and foremost. I think, too, the safer barrier played a large role in that. Our Nick Yeoman timed it. I think it took the Hamato safety crew around 10 seconds to get to him. Some of the changes that were made after James Hinchcliffe's horrible accident 2 years ago to kind of beef up the sides of the race car and the cockpit and whatnot, nothing got into the cockpit. I mean, it remained essentially intact, and as a result, he was able to remain conscious throughout the hit. And so, you know, it just so many layers of safety innovations, and a lot of those are thanks to, you know, what has been done through the Verizon IndyCar Series. I think it's, as a result, Sebastian Bourdais, I believe it was Marshall Pruitt from Racer Magazine, put in his article, he's able to hug and kiss his kids this morning, and our thoughts and prayers continue to be with him for a full and speedy recovery. And I don't think there's been any formal announcement yet about what Dale Coyne's intentions are for that car. Some rumors out there, but I don't deal in those. We'll just have to wait for the formal announcement to see if they even qualify today.
Yeah, and obviously that one of the lower budget teams, not trying to make them sound like they're not a quality team, but obviously compared to the Andretti's and Ganassi's of the world and Penske's of the world, they're dealing with a little bit smaller budget, so it could be hard for them to put together a ride to replace that 18 car that crashed yesterday. Mark James from the IMS Radio Network joining us here on WGR. And of course, this week there's a big multi-city media tour for the stars of the IndyCar series, and one of them's coming to Buffalo here this week. Graham Rahal is going to come to town with the folks from Watkins Glen International, and you know, qualified right in the middle of the field yesterday. What do you think of Graham's chances and his season so far with his Rahal Letterman Lanigan team so far this year?
Well, I think he's happy to get to May and have a teammate, Oriel Servia. I mean, he's a one-man band, and he has expressed his frustration over the course of the season as a result. I mean, he has nobody to share data with, nobody to help him on the racetrack. That's a one-car team, but they have the veteran Oriel Servia here with them, which Graham is thrilled to have him as a teammate. And yet he expressed some concern yesterday. They made some changes to the race car that they felt like that should have made them faster and weren't, and didn't really point a negative finger at Honda, but said he certainly has some questions for them and the way they set their cars up because of the success that Andretti Autosport had. Graham is certainly a contender. I mean, he always finds a way to the front regardless of how he qualifies. I think we've seen a maturation out of him over the past couple of years, and you remember 2 years ago, contended for a championship, really disappointed now last year panned out. And as big a story as it was last year when Alexander Rossi won the Indianapolis 500, if that next generation of Rahal or that next generation of Andretti, for instance, would get to victory lane on race day, I think it would be a massive story as well. And I don't think either one are out of the question.
Mark James from the IMS Radio Network. Mark, we are looking forward to hearing you and your colleagues next week here on WGR for coverage of the greatest spectacle in racing. I love that day so much. I come in here, do my show in the morning, and then I hop in my car to get home so I can watch the race on the TV. But one of the things I enjoy the most is I get in my car, turn on WGR, and that theme music, and then to hear you and all your colleagues' voices, Donald Davidson, everybody, just to listen to that open of that broadcast is also a great thrill for me. Really looking forward to next Sunday. I know today's a busy day for you. Thank you for the time.
Well, you're a proud affiliate, we know, and a valued affiliate. We appreciate it, and we don't want to wish our lives away or the season, but we're so thrilled to be back to Watkins Glen, and we hope to see a great crowd there come Labor Day weekend when we head back to one of the greatest racing facilities in the world there in the beautiful state of New York. Thank you for the time.
All right, Mark, enjoy the race next Sunday.
Will do. Thanks.
Mark James from the IMS Radio Network. Again, we will have live flag-to-flag coverage of the Indianapolis 500 here next Sunday on WGR. Part of that great day of motorsports, the Grand Prix of Monaco, We'll be on the air at 11 o'clock, right leading up to coverage of the Indy 500, and then, of course the nightcap with the Coke 600 for the NASCAR Cup Series. We come back, we'll wrap up this week's edition of the program. We've got our local racing roundup. Actually, lots of race results to get to. Not a lot of rain talk to mention here in their results, so that's a good thing. We'll come back and wrap up Fast Track here on WGR. And we'll start with the Friday night action, Lancaster National Dragway. It was Brian Hitchcock getting the win in Top ET, Ryan Rickinson in Mod ET, Lucas Salemi in Bikes and Sleds, Fast Eddie Semlich got the win in Street, and Jason Bazink in Buffalo Street Outlaws there Friday night at Lancaster. Freedom Motorsports Park opened up their season, their new Outlaw Modified class. Brad Rapp got the win over Ron Cartwright, Adam Hilton, and Patrick Emmerling finished fourth in just his second Dirt Modified start. James Michael Friesen got the win in the Sportsman, Al Brewer in the Street Stocks, Brad Shepard got the win in the Mini Stocks. Ransomville had to cancel their Friday night action due to track conditions. Saturday night, Genesee Speedway, Greg Majewka picked up the win in the Sportsman feature over Tony Pangrazio. John Zimmerman got the 360 late model win. Oh boy, I'm going to butcher this name. Kenny Bignouche got the win in the Street Stocks. I apologize if I got that wrong, over Byron DeWitt. Chad Dickinson in the Mini Stocks. James Gayton in the Mini Stocks. And Allison DeWitt got the win in the Bandits at Genesee Speedway on Saturday. Lancaster Speedway last night, Chuck Hosfeld winning second week in the row in the Sportsman. Max Northam got his first career Street Stock win, and Chris Pinnell got his first career four-cylinder win at Lancaster. Holland Speedway opened up their season last night. Kirk Totten got the win in the Pro Modifieds over Patrick Emmerling and Tommy Catalano. Tim Welshen's got the win in the Chargers. Bob Palmer, an emotional victory for Bob. His dad, Butch Palmer, the butcher from the Bisons, who passed away this offseason, he got the win in the Hornets. Dave Wallaber in the TQ Midgets. Bryce Norton in the Legends, Darren Lenhardt in the Sixes, and Marty Hughes got the win in the Figure Eights. Wyoming County International Speedway and Perry also opened their season, and it was Dave Krawczyk in the Super Stocks, Paul Fly in the Four Cylinders, and Alan Bookmiller got the win in the SST Modifieds at Wyoming County International Speedway last night. Also, Merrittville Speedway in action yesterday. Matt Williamson got the win in the Modifieds over Mike Bowman and Tim Jones. Brad Rouse got the win in the Sportsman. Brent Bigelow in the Mod Lights. Greg Rauscher in the Novice Sportsman. And Dave Bailey, Brewster Baker himself, got the win in the Hoosier Stocks. Speaking of the Merrittville Speedway, tomorrow, of course, is Victoria Day in Canada. They have their big Brian Stevens Memorial Race tomorrow, plus the Rush Late Models, all part of the action tomorrow at the Merrittville Speedway tomorrow night. So if you're looking for some Monday night racing action, tonight's racing at the Humberstone Speedway has been rained out already. They've already decided to pull the plug, so their season continues to be delayed, unfortunately, over there in Port Colborne. Tonight, though, the World of Outlaws event at Weedsport is still on as scheduled as of right now, from what I can tell. And also, Weedsport has the Super Dirt Car Big Block Modifieds on Monday night, too. So you've got your choices for some Monday night racing action. Coming up this week, Thursday night, Lancaster has a race that was rained out a couple weeks ago. So they'll be running Thursday night at 7 o'clock. And then all your traditional weekend tracks Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of Memorial Day weekend. So a busy race weekend if you're a local racing fan, with the Monday and Thursday action to look forward to. Again, we'll be on next week kind of to kick things off with the Indy 500, and the Coke 600 will be your preview to that. Hope you tune in and join us. It'll be on 11 a.m. regular time, apparently, and then we'll lead you right up to the green flag of the Indianapolis 500. Graham Rahal will be in town this week on Tuesday, and right now I have him scheduled to chat with him and sit down, so we'll have that for you next week, hopefully. I always announce these things and then they fall apart, so hopefully this doesn't, and we'll be able to talk to Graham on Tuesday, and you'll be able to hear it on Sunday as he is coming to town as part of the big Indy 500 media event. Last year, of course, they brought Joseph Newgarden to town, and this year it's going to be Graham Rahal. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next Sunday here on WGR.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.